This is The Source. I'm Jennifer Pemberton. Shortly after the 19th century explorers of the American West sent back their reports saying there were vast tracts of land ripe for settling, the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation was created to make that settlement possible by distributing water from the big rivers like the Colorado and the Columbia. This massive distribution system is made up of large-scale projects that include huge dams and thousands of miles of canals and pipelines. Today, the Bureau of Reclamation is the largest wholesaler of water in the West, providing drinking water and irrigation for one-third of the population, some 31 million people and 10 million acres of farmland. The Bureau of Reclamation is visible and present in our lives in the West. But Dan Beard, who used to be the commissioner, the main guy of the Bureau of Reclamation, thinks it's time to get rid of the agency entirely. And he's advocating for tearing down some of the monuments of the Bureau's heyday, the large dams that are as iconic to the West as sagebrush and cactus. He's packaged these ideas in a new book called Deadbeat Dams. I talked to Dan Beard earlier this month when he visited Utah State University as part of his book tour.
Well, my name is Dan Beard, and I've written a book called Deadbeat Dams, Why We Should Abolish the Bureau of Reclamation and Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. I had a long history of working in Washington, D.C. on water resource matters, both in the Congress and in the executive branch, and I served in a lot of different political positions, appointees. I was an appointee of President Carter and President Clinton. And about 10 years ago, I became concerned about the direction of Western water policies, and I began to formulate in the back of my mind a book, and a book really focused for the general public as opposed to water practitioners and water wonks. And I wanted to write a book that the general public could pick up and they could understand what is going on, why it's going on, what impact it has on them personally, and what we can do to change the course of things. And so that's the nature of the book. It tries to recount how we're using and misusing federal dollars and an agenda of things that we really ought to try to address and why those things will help improve the way we manage water in the entire United States, but also in the West.
I read that you saw the Damnation film that Patagonia produced about dam removal, that you saw that in Utah when you were
I did.
Here?
Last March, I was asked to come out to participate in a conference in Salt Lake, which I did. And as I came out, they asked me if I would be kind enough to introduce the film Damnation to an audience at a movie theater, one of the movie theaters in Salt Lake. And I said, sure, I fully expecting that when I went in the room, there would be 10 people there as old as I am and with Birkenstocks. And it turned out that when I went in the room, every seat was filled. Students were sitting in the aisles, standing along the side and in the back. And you could have knocked me over with a feather because every person there was under 35. I was astounded. I didn't know there were that many young people interested in water issues and particularly water policy reform and dam removal. And so it really stuck with me. For the next couple of months, I thought about that and I kept coming back to it thinking there are people out there who care about this and they're young and energetic. And so the one thing I could do for them would be to lay out an agenda of things. Here are the things that we really ought to be working on based on my 40-year career working on water issues. And so that's one of the reasons I wrote the book.
How far along were you in the idea of the book when you saw the film?
I finished a manuscript a couple of years ago, but then I decided it wasn't the right time and I couldn't, it just wasn't right. And so the manuscript sat for several years. And it was only this last summer that I dusted it off, updated, revised it, and then sent it off to a publisher.
So the ideas that you propose in Deadbeat Dams about getting rid of the Bureau of Rec and also getting rid of some dams, among other things, which we'll get into. But I wanted to know, it sounds like you had a lot of these ideas when you were at the Bureau of Reclamation. Has anything changed, and do you feel like you have sort of more power to reform water policy sort of as the author of this book than you did when you were at the head of the organization? Or kind of what is the difference between your two, I guess, the positions that you're in to promote water change?
Well, where you stand on an issue often depends on where you sit. And today I'm a retired federal official. I don't plan to work for anybody in the future other than myself. And so it's easier to write a book and say what you want in that book if you don't have to worry about a future career. It makes it a lot easier. I wanted to be the commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation. I lobbied for the job. You have to put on a campaign and get people to support you to get the appointment. And I did, and I wanted the job. And I wanted the job because I wanted to change the organization from the inside out. Once I got the job, I did make a lot of changes. I reduced the number of employees. I rechanged the focus. I changed the emphasis of the kinds of projects that we undertook. I changed our budget. I did a lot of things. And I thought that those changes were permanent, and I thought those changes would be lasting. And I was wrong. They weren't. As soon as I left, they really receded back into the typical civil engineering, monument building kind of world. I always referred to them when I was with employees. I always said to them, we're an environmental organization, and we need to think about things in those ways. Once I left, they became a civil engineering organization and that wanted to build monuments again. So about 10 years ago, I just concluded that, you know, it isn't going to work. We can't change the organization from within. And the only way we're going to make a lasting difference is to abolish the organization, to get rid of it. I say that reluctantly and a little sadly, because I've spent much of my career trying to make it a different organization and to make a change. But I couldn't do it, and I don't think anybody else can either. So I think the best thing to do is to abolish the organization and take the parts that are meaningful and need to be carried out by a federal employee and allow those to be done by somebody else.
So what are the main kind of mandates of the Bureau of Reclamation? So I guess if we're going to talk about abolishing it, we should talk about what they do and who's going to do it.
Well, the number one thing they were created for was to help settle the West. And they did, you know, high five and a fist bump. The second reason they were created is that there was, at the time, in the early 1900s, no residual of engineering talent and expertise in either the private sector or the public sector to be able to build facilities. So you needed a federal agency to do that. That's no longer the case. We have a vibrant private sector that can build anything, and our highways and other public works projects are all done by the private sector and by local governments. So the Bureau of Reclamation doesn't do anything that can't be done by somebody else. Well, if that's the case, why do you need them? A lot of them will say, well, you need us to run dams and projects. And the answer to that is no, we don't. Somebody else can do that just as well. They're the largest wholesale water supply utility in the United States, and they're probably one of the top 10 power producers. But those don't have to be federal responsibilities. Those can all be done by private sector, state or local governments where those facilities exist. So we will need a few federal officials to make some decisions. But in terms of turning the valves, flipping switches, they don't have to be federal employees.
The other half of the subtitle of your book, Tear Down Glen Canyon Dam. Mm-hmm. So why Glen Canyon Dam? Is it symbolic in some ways, or is it just sort of literally the best example of a dam that needs to go?
I think it's the best example of a very symbolic dam. The question is, why do we have a dam at Glen Canyon, and what is its purpose? Glen Canyon Dam was built on faulty assumptions. It was the result of political wheeling and dealing in the 1940s and 50s by a very small number of people. And I don't think that the people who agreed to support it understood exactly what the costs would be associated with constructing it. We have flooded one of the most beautiful places on the face of the earth, Glen Canyon. It's a magnificent area. And it continues to be partially flooded by Lake Powell. And the question is, why do we keep Glen Canyon Dam? We don't market any water out of there. The amount of power that's produced has been reduced by a third because of the drought. We no longer produce peaking power from it. There are ample alternatives to the hydroelectric power generated at Glen Canyon. So we don't need the water. We don't need the power. The reservoir itself is less than half empty. It's about 44% of capacity. Hoover Dam downstream is also around 45% capacity. My feeling is if we don't need Glen Canyon Dam anymore, we ought to remove it. We ought to bypass, move water downstream, fill Lake Mead, and market the water to the lower basin states in Mexico and generate power from Hoover Dam. So we know that the system, because of climate change and the drought, we know that going forward, we're going to have less water and it's going to come at a different time and in different forms than it has in the past. So it could well be that the structures that we've built, the system that we've built for collecting and moving water, will have to be abandoned. And I think Glen Canyon will be part of that process. A lot of smaller dams will become irrelevant or won't work. And I think we're going to have to make some hard decisions going forward.
In places like Utah, where we depend on snowpack, we have natural frozen reservoirs, basically. We know that we're going to be getting more rain and less snow, and we're not going to be able to rely on those sort of natural reservoirs. Do we need to build reservoirs to capture that water? Do we need to rethink how we're talking about water usage in light of what you just said about climate change and these big changes that are happening? How do we reimagine that whole water infrastructure? Because we talk about the snowpack as sort of preserving our water for when we need it.
Yeah.
How else do we do that?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is do exactly what you said, which is to rethink things. Traditionally, we have said that the way to solve a water supply problem is to build a reservoir. But the reality is reservoirs are not terribly efficient. Evaporation is a real problem. Leakage is a real problem. And it's a very inefficient way of delivering water. But it's what we've always done, so we're going to continue to do it. But we need to look at underground storage. We need to look at conjunctive use of surface water and groundwater. We need to manage our groundwater better. We need to promote conservation. We need to look at the way we price water so we price it in a way that helps promote conservation. There are thousands of things that we need to do going forward to look at things in a different way. We have to really look for creative, innovative ways of addressing these problems.
Well, you talk about reservoirs as a potential solution to a water supply problem, but we also have water demand problems, it seems like. I mean, if we're going to talk about where are we going to get the water from, we first need to ask, what do we need all of that water for? And you address conservation, water conservation in the book as a solution or an alternative to the water problems that we have. We talk about residential conservation, that we're, you know, supposed to put in low-flow toilets and Xeriscape and all of these things, and we can make huge cutbacks in our water usage at home. It makes a big difference. But from my understanding, in Utah and other Western states, 85% of our water is being used for agriculture. I haven't really heard anybody talk about conservation on that bigger scale. Like, we know what our personal responsibility is to conserve water. What's agriculture and industry's responsibility?
Well, if water is delivered to agriculture at subsidized rates, free in some cases, or very low rates, what's the incentive for them to do anything? And the short answer is there is none. So what we need to do is eliminate the subsidies that we place on water, and that can be done through our tax system or some other way. But there is no doubt that we need to promote water conservation and efficient use in agriculture, and that's where we would have the most dramatic and the biggest payoff. Just a 10% increase in the efficiency or reduction in the use of water for agriculture would meet the needs for municipal and industrial water purposes in just about every state in the West. So we're not talking about a big, it's not a heavy lift. The challenge is to encourage farmers and irrigation districts to be creative and to be innovative and to reduce their consumption of water. And that's very difficult to do at this point because all the incentives work in the other direction.
Is there anything worth keeping from the current federal water management system as headed by the Bureau of Reclamation? If we were going to abolish it, is there something? What would you run back into the burning building and save?
I think there are a lot of very bright and talented young people who work on ecosystem management and restoration in the Bureau. And they will find a home working for either state or local governments or other federal agencies, EPA, Department of Agriculture, and others. I think the level of expertise that the Bureau has built up over the years in restoring ecosystems and working on some of the environmental problems associated with operating their facilities has been pretty remarkable. And I think that those folks, I'm confident, won't have any trouble finding a job and getting a paycheck.
Dan Beard, former commissioner of the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation and author of Deadbeat Dams, thank you for taking the time to write the book and for talking to me and for sharing your ideas.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
There are two stories about beaver coming up. You'll probably want to stay tuned after this short break.